going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right. It is another edition of the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and we go deep on this edition on all things men's FIBA World Cup. Yes, we are finally here, and Team Canada is ready to rise. Can they punch their ticket to the Olympics? What will it take, and who will be doing it? We got a group of 12. The roster is set. Exhibition games behind us. 7 of those 12. Are NBA players, which is a high number, not as high as some people thought it was going to be earlier in the summer, but here we are. No excuses at this point. And I have no excuse to give you anything other than great analysis and perspective on the tournament. And for that, we go to Alex Adam, who is a freelance writer. You will see his work on Raptors Republic throughout the tournament. You will hear him on the Sportsnet Radio Network throughout the tournament as well. And you'll hear him right now on Going Deep as we go deep on all things Team Canada at the FIBA World Championships. Let's go. So he is on the ground in Jakarta right now. First of all, given the time difference, thank you for having this at a respectable time here in Eastern Standard Time Zone. But let's just set the scene and the mood. What is the vibe locally around the tournament? And what is the vibe around the Canadian camp right now?
Thanks so much, Donovan, for having me. And the vibe around the city, you see placards all over, especially of Team Canada. People might not know, but the tournaments in the FIBA World Cups in Jakarta, where I am, in Manila and in Okinawa, and actually Indonesia picked Canada to be in Jakarta. So Canada had no choice to be in Jakarta in a way. And so you see placards everywhere. I was walking back from the press conference earlier today, and there's a big, I think it was Sun Life, kind of ad of RJ, of Shea, all over. So you see everyone's faces where I am, close to the arena. I think the first game supposedly is sold out, in terms of the Canadian versus, the Canada versus France. So, I think just the people have really taken to the game here. And I think Canada is definitely the team everyone here in Jakarta wants to watch. Now for the team itself, I think the mood's been quite interesting. I'd say it's a lot. I think a lot of players talk about how it's a work trip, how kind of get to the business. We need to, you know, we're really focused. I think the teams, I don't think they're necessarily relaxed. I think they really have a goal in mind. And that is to qualify for the Olympics. This team's never made the Olympics since 2000, and when it was Steve Nash and Rome Barrett and Sherman Hamilton. So I wouldn't say it's been kind of, I think they very focused. I think they all know what the job at hand is, and that is to bring Canada to the Olympics. And I think the players are pretty ready to get this thing going. And I think they feel the pressure of the weight of 24 years of not making the Olympics.
So when we're talking about international basketball in this country, the talk generally starts and stops with, well, who's there? Who's playing? What NBA players are? Who isn't there? Why aren't they not there? When you look at this roster, which has been, you know, slowly cut down to the 12 that will represent us on the floor, were there any omissions from the greater group that you were surprised by?
I think so. Just to set the scene a little bit, obviously they brought, I think it was 17 or 18 players to training camp in Toronto. Obviously, Kevin Pangos withdrew with an injury, but Corey Joseph was there. O'Shea Brissett, Cassius Robinson, and Jamal Murray were all there. After training camp, the latter three were not there, and Jamal Murray was kind of up in the air, and they said they'd figure it out once the team got to Spain. They got to Spain, and he wasn't there. So those are kind of the omissions of the players that were committed to play for this country. There were two guys that were just cut yesterday for Canada. Tommy Scrubb, veteran of the program. His brother Phil actually made it. And unfortunately, this is the second time Tommy's been the last cut for Canada. And then there's Kenny Cherry, a good European basketball player. But he was only added to the team, I think, a corresponding move to Jamal Murray pulling out. So I think for just the 12-man roster that was announced yesterday, I don't think there's a lot of omissions or kind of surprises. But obviously not having Jamal Murray, which was announced about a week and a half ago, obviously is a huge blow. I think so many people wanted to have him there. Andrew Wiggins is not there as well, but he never committed to the program. Just so people know, after Canada failed to qualify in 2021, they got a set list of players that said, I'm going to commit for every summer. Even if I'm injured, I'm going to come to training camp as part of the qualifying run to the World Cup, and this year in 2023 and 2024. So the players committed to the 2022 to 24 summers, and those include everyone that's here right now. So RJ Barrett, Shea, Kelly Olynyk, Dwight Powell, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, as well as Jamal Murray and others. So they brought maybe the majority of the guys that committed, but not everyone. So that's kind of the lay of the land of this roster. But I still think you have a guy like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, RJ Barrett. This team is really, really talented. One of the most talented teams in the tournament, and definitely can go far if all things go right.
You mentioned SGA and RJ. I want to know, in your estimation, which player with the initials is going to have the bigger impact? Not necessarily the better player, but in terms of role and fit with this team to do what they're hoping to do, who needs to have a big tournament?
I think I'll answer it this way, in terms of if RJ Barrett plays the way he has been playing for in the friendlies, I think he's almost the X factor for Canada, just because he's such a good attacker to the rim. He can finish. He loves the contact, and he's grown up with the FIBA game, right? He won the U19 World Championship as a 17-year-old. He was the MVP for Canada. Obviously, his dad's the GM, and so he's grown up with FIBA. Well, for Shea, he hasn't necessarily. He played last summer, but not to the same extent as someone like RJ Barrett. So I think if RJ Barrett plays the way it seems like he has been playing, he's been shooting really well. He said to me yesterday, I asked him, like, what's the biggest difference from the FIBA game, or from the NBA game to the FIBA game? And he said, the paint's wide open, which was a good quote and an interesting thing. So I think he feels as though he can kind of get to his spots maybe a bit more easily than the NBA. And his game seems to be maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say better, but definitely really suits the FIBA game maybe more so than the NBA. So compared to Shea, who's been really good, but maybe not the same type of level he has been for OKC the past year and the past couple years, but he's still really dynamic, an amazing player. And at the end of these close games they had in the friendlies, he was definitely the one that kind of spurred them on to win two games in overtime against Germany and so I think Shea's the better player, but if RJ plays that way, the way he is playing right now, I think Canada will feel really confident that they can beat any team in this tournament.
There's been a conversation about this being the most talented team we've ever had. Now, some of that talent obviously didn't end up being on the final roster, and if they do qualify for the Olympics, with the amount of young players coming through, that might play a factor. You know, I think that we may see more talented teams in the future. Having said that, I don't think we've ever had a player as talented as Shea is right now. Look at the Steve Nash years when he was dominant. By the time he's winning back-to-back MVPs, he was no longer really playing for the national team. Is, in your estimation, for the first time at an international event, the best player in the tournament, Canadian?
Luka Doncic, kind of something to say about that, but I think it's interesting to note for people that don't know, out of the all NBA selections last year, there's only two guys, which out of the 15 selected, and that's Shea and Luka Doncic. So if I'd say maybe 1B, I don't think, I mean, it's hard to quibble with Luka Doncic, but he's definitely one of the best players in this tournament. He's, I think when you talk about Steve Nash, people don't know, like, Steve Nash wasn't an MVP. I don't think he was even an all-star by 2000, right? And Shea was all NBA first team, which means essentially he was a top five player in the NBA last year. And so I think what it gives to, what a player like that gives to Canada, is just the sense of confidence in these late games, right? They beat Germany in Germany, games close, and it's Shea down the stretch really bringing that game home and in overtime. And same thing happened in Spain when they beat the number one ranked team in the world in Spain. So I think just, it's like the NBA. It's not, it's still the same game in terms of basketball compared from the NBA and FIBA. If you have the best player on the court, a lot of the times you're going to win the game. So I think Canadian fans should be really excited to watch Shea play for his national team here. And I think he'll play really well. And he's kind of been the leader. Like they had, I was just at practice earlier today, and he was kind of leading the team chants. And I think he's really the role, kind of the leader on this team.
Would you like to recite some of those team chants for us?
So they were with the sports psychologist doctor in the middle, and they were, I couldn't hear it because we were a bit ways away, but some of it was like, get the rebound or something like that. And everyone was kind of laughing. And so it sounded like it was these kind of themes that the sports psychologist wanted them to keep kind of saying to themselves as a team, and Shea was in the middle of it. So it was something I've never seen before. But hopefully it works, but I couldn't hear it directly, but Shea was definitely the one screaming it, and then kind of singing them the themes out loud. And I think another one was like, cut faster or something like that. So yeah, it was funny to watch.
Well, if Canada is killing it on the boards, we now know why. This is the investigative reporting that we needed from you, Alex. Talk exactly. to us about the group, because when people were charting, you know, what international basketball would be like, you know, over the next 5-10 years, when we looked at threats to the United States, clearly, like Argentina was in the past, like Spain was in the past, it was really narrowed down to three potential countries: Australia, Canada, and France. You get France right out the gate. Talk to us about the group and what Canada is going to see in their first three opponents.
Yeah, so France obviously is the toughest test out of the first three games. They won the silver medal. They made it to the Eurobasket final last year. They played together. They have guys like Rudy Gobert, who's even better in FIBA because there's no defensive 3 seconds. He's much maligned for his perimeter defense in the NBA, but he can kind of sit in the paint and just be a shot blocker. Evan Fournier has always played well for France, and they've just played well together. And they're a big, big team. Like, I was watching their practice a little bit yesterday, and man, they felt much bigger than the Canadians. They a lot of height, a lot of physicality, a lot of girth on that team, and they played together, right? And that's the problem for Canada in a lot of ways, is that they're still learning each other. They're coming together as a unit, and obviously other teams are as well, but they have that continuity, and it's more ingrained, and they know their sets. They know how to play with each other. They don't have a new coach like Canada is with Jordy Fernandez. So I think really the first game is going to be so pivotal in the success of Canada at this tournament. I think if they are to win that game against France tomorrow, I really like their chances of going to the quarterfinals and especially making it to the Olympics. So that's not to say that if they lose to France, it's all over, but it would be almost just this huge bonus for Canada, where I think making the quarterfinals would be for sure the case, but very likely. Now they play Lebanon, who I don't think is going to be much of a problem. And then they play Latvia, who I think if Kristaps Porzingis was playing, I'd be pretty worried that Canada might not come out of this group. They have a lot of really good shooters with Davis Bertans, who's their only NBA player. They were 11-1 in qualifying, so they're no slouch. I think Canada should win easy, but they have a lot of shooters. So in the game of basketball, if they go 55% from three and make all their shots, then Canada might be in trouble. But those are the two teams that Canada will have to worry about. But really France, which will really impact Canada's likelihood of making the quarters, depending on the outcome of that game.
And talk to us about the stakes for this tournament, because you go into a tournament, the goals are, one, win it, two, medal, but you know there's a secondary goal for Canada, and that would be obviously qualification to the Olympics. Exactly how can qualification be earned?
Yeah, that's a great question, because FIBA doesn't make anything obvious. The long story short of it is that the way Canada makes the Olympics is they have to come top two out of the Americas teams at this tournament. So the Americas teams, for people that don't know, are all the North and South American teams. So other than Canada and the US, it's Brazil, Mexico, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, and Dominican Republic. So it doesn't matter if Canada gets a medal or makes the quarters per se. All they have to do is finish higher than all the rest of the teams. Obviously, I think the USA one is just the USA and has a really easy draw. I don't really see them not being one of those two spots. I think for Canada, the two teams to really look out for is the Dominican Republic. They have Karl-Anthony Towns. They're a good FIBA side as well, even before they added him. And they have a really easy draw. They play Philippines in their side of the bracket. They might have to beat Italy and Serbia or one of those two. So I think they have a very good chance of making the quarters. So it probably means Canada will have to at least make the quarters to make the Olympics. Also, Brazil, who's here in Jakarta, they're in Spain's group on the opposite group here. And they just beat Australia, who, as you mentioned, is one of the best teams in the world in Australia. So that will probably be a team Canada will have to probably beat in the second round if they are to make the quarters as well. So Canada's really had a really, really tough draw. Because if they are to beat France and even maybe Spain, they just get to the quarterfinals, and then they hopefully have win a game or two, maybe in a classification game if they lose the quarters to maybe Dominican Republic. I think on paper, talent wise, they're close to top five team in this tournament, but their draw probably has two of the top five teams in the tournament that they have to beat just to make the quarterfinals. So the draw hasn't been easy or kind to Canada.
Yeah, and a big part of that is coming into the tournament, they're ranked 15th in the world. Hopefully with a good tournament, that ranking will go up a little bit. One of the other things that they're navigating is they have a new coach with Nick Nurse signing on with the Philadelphia 76ers. What do you know about Coach Jordy, and how, if anything, will things change? Because the whole thought was continuity, keeping this group together, having a core in the summer. And the wrinkle in the plan is the new voice at the head of the room.
Yeah, he's definitely probably almost the exact opposite of Nick Nurse in a lot of ways. Just kind of personality-wise, he's very much known as a player's coach. He had a very good relationship with Jamal Murray. That might have been one of the reasons why Jamal Murray even came to training camp after a long year. The players seem to really like him. He's very humble, very a good communicator. I think he has all this FIBA experience, right? He coached for Spain for many years under Sergio Scariola, who was an assistant for Toronto, who's the head coach of Spain. And they've been super successful. He coached with Mike Brown, and he's an associate coach with the Sacramento Kings. But he coached Nigeria at the Olympics. So he has a lot of FIBA experience, maybe more so than compared to Nick Nurse. Just in terms of the on-court kind of adjustments and reads, he's much more fundamental. People who love the Raptors for the past couple of years know that Nick Nurse loves to throw in a box and one, throw janky defenses, change things up a lot. Jordy Fernandez has been a bit different. He's kind of been, okay, let's not switch too much. Let's play consistent lineups. Let's not throw a box and one around. They haven't been playing a lot of zone. It's been much more fundamental, but that builds continuity, right? The players know what to expect. They know their defensive assignments. They know their reads. They know their kind of offensive plays. So it's a bit more simplified and just more kind of fundamental with less out of the box stuff. So I think he's a really good coach. He seems to be a really good communicator. The players seem to really like him. I don't think morale's low or anything or dramatically different because they have a new coach in Jordy Fernandez.
One of the things that I'm looking forward to and that I'm happy we're at a place to do is debate about who should be playing, who should be on the floor for Canada, because it historically hasn't been much of a debate. So in your eyes, based off what you've seen and what you project, who starts for Canada and what are our closing lineups at the end of a game when we're down and need a bucket and when we're up and need a stop?
That's a really good question. For the starters, I think it's pretty set in stone. What's an interesting wrinkle is Jordy Fernandez has had the same starting lineup for every five game or all the five friendly games in Dylan Brooks, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, RJ Barrett, Kelly Olynyk, Dwight Powell. So I think that is going to be the starters unless an injury or something dramatically changes. But I think what you talked about in terms of the end of games, if Canada's down a basket, if Canada's up a basket, there's been a lot of switching late in games with Jordy Fernandez against Germany, against Spain. Essentially, what he'd do is he'd play Kelly Olynyk at the five for offense, but on defense would bring Dwight Powell in for kind of physicality for defense and for rebounding. And then he'd put Lou Dort in the starting lineup or in the five-man unit at the end of games to kind of spread the floor. So I think that's going to be really the interesting dynamic for this team is that how much does Kelly Olynyk play at the five, and maybe you sacrifice a bit of defense, but at the same time, your offense should be humming. They played against Germany and they went five out, and I think they had 113 points in that game in a 45-minute game, which is 3 minutes less than an NBA game. So their offense looked just amazing. Their defense definitely had something to kind of want more of. But then against Spain, they had Dwight Powell in and in playing in the third quarter, and they had two successive shot clock violations. I think they had three in that quarter. They'd only gave up seven points midway through the quarter. Their defense was just tenacious and ferocious, and that was because of Dwight Powell, I think, in that lineup. That adds more defensive flexibility and being able to finish out possessions off rebounds. So it's going to be really interesting. I think what you said is a great point in terms of if they're up one, maybe they go for Dwight Powell. If they're down, maybe they go for Lou Dort or Nickeil Alexander-Walker. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think at the end of the games, RJ Barrett and Shai are going to have the ball a lot of the time.
As we look forward on this team, they've made the decision to keep that roster pretty locked, not make exceptions, have to make the multi-summer commitment. But, you know, once we get past this cycle and theoretically in Olympics moving forward, that opens up. And so whether it's the Nembhard brothers or Ben Mathurin or Shaedon Sharpe, all of a sudden become options to not only become part of the core, but potentially be big players in what Canada's doing moving forward. Who hasn't been a part of the program that could be, do you think, would make a real interesting addition?
I'll exclude Andrew Wiggins from this discussion because I think there's a decent chance he could play if Canada made the Olympics. But I think that's a really good question. I'd say probably, I think Shaedon Sharpe would be just really fun. His potential is kind of limitless. He just jumps out of the gym, can shoot, kind of profiles as a Paul George type of player. But I don't know if he'd be the best FIBA player, especially at a young age, just because it's a lot about continuity. Ben Mathurin, I really like as well. But I'm going to probably go with Andrew Nembhard, because Canada really needs, I think, another ball handler, another creator. Corey Joseph obviously isn't with the team, and I think that's a big area of weakness with this team, is just not having that backup point guard and playmaker. And he was phenomenal in his rookie year for the Pacers. He's played for Canada in 2019. People might not remember, but I think he was at Gonzaga at the time. He played as a college student for Canada in 2019. He played 2018 as well with RJ Barrett when they were teens. So he knows how to play FIBA. I think he's the type of player Canada needs, even though he might not be as talented as a Shaedon Sharpe or Ben Mathurin. Canada has a lot of wings. They have RJ Barrett. They have Dylan Brooks. They have Shea. They have Andrew Wiggins if he were to play, Jamal Murray. Like, they don't really need necessarily more wings type players, but they definitely probably need a backup point guard. So he might be the one, that guy that really supplants himself on the roster. And I know he was interested in playing for Canada this summer, but it's hard for guys early in their career to commit, especially when they're trying to kind of build their own NBA careers. So I do think, though, to kind of wrap this up, that on this point, that if Canada is to make the Olympics, I think Jamal Murray's there if he's healthy. I think Andrew Wiggins is there. I know Canada didn't necessarily give out kind of feelers or invite guys that weren't part of their 14-man commitment that they made in 21 to players like Shea and ask for that three-year commitment. But I think that might be broken if Canada were to make the Olympics. It's going to be hard to tell maybe Andrew Wiggins or Ben Mathurin or Andrew Nembhard, hey, you're not going to the Olympics. We're going to play with someone else.
And lastly, your prediction. How does Canada fare? Where do they end up at the end of this tournament?
I've been on the radio and other places, and I always have this cop-out answer. So I apologize, Donovan. But I think if they beat France on Friday, I think they're going to make the quarterfinals, and I think they're going to make the Olympics. If they are to lose, that doesn't mean they can't do it. But I think it'll be much harder for them, and I'm not sure that they'll be able to it. So, you know what? I'm going to go with my heart, and I'm going to say they're going to make it. But I think it's really kind of pretty 50-50, because I do think the key for them is to make the quarters. If they're able to get out and make the quarters, I think they'll make the Olympics. I guess I'll go, they'll make it, but it's going to be really tight. And I think that's why people should watch, because this team's the most talented team Canada's ever had. You get to watch a guy like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. You get to watch a guy like RJ Barrett. They're a really fun team to watch. And finally, Canada will have the talent that they've always been seeking. And people won't stomp on Canada's flag, as Rowan Barrett told me today. The guys on the team really take pride that Canada is a basketball nation, and hopefully they can show up here in Jakarta and hopefully in Manila for the quarterfinals and make the Olympics. And I think it'd be really momentous for basketball in this country.
Well, that is a great reason for people to watch. They can watch on Sportsnet as the tournament starts August 25th from the Philippines, Japan, and Indonesia. In studio here in Canada, we have Danielle Michaud, Sherman Hamilton, and Michael Grange. From the booth, Dan Shulman and Alvin Williams. Can't think of a better pairing. And on the ground as a reporter, Arash Madani. Also on the ground is Alex Adams, who will be writing throughout, on radio throughout, and will continue to bother throughout, hopefully for a long time, as Canada has a long tournament. Thank you so much for this.
Thanks so much for having me, Donovan.
So there you have it. A very informed perspective on the FIBA World Cup and Canada's road to potential qualification for the Olympics. After the break, we give you a very uninformed perspective. That would be mine, and Show's, which is much more informed than mine. We talk more Canada basketball up next.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thank you much, Grandma and Granddad. It is the Going Deep podcast. By their accents, you can tell that they are immigrants to this country who came here to make a better life. And one of the things that I love about following the international game in this country specifically, whether you're talking about our men's and women's international basketball teams that represent Canada via Canada Basketball, or the NSOs when it comes to Canada soccer and our soccer teams, are just look at the rosters. To a man or woman, almost exclusively first and second generation Canadians, which I find really, really cool. Just the symbolism of Canadians representing Canada from families who chose to be in Canada, to me is really cool. But I'm a bit of a sap. In terms of the actual basketball, what's cool is that we have real dudes, real players on this team in this tournament. And so it'll be kind of like a bit of a video game watching all of these guys who we watch on League Pass, on different teams all the time, and you're cheering for them and their personal success, if not for their team success, to be coupled together. There's still a bunch that I wish were there. Trey Lyles, who missed a big bucket in the past to get us, you know, further in qualification. His ability to stretch the floor would be badly needed. Chris Boucher, his ability to, especially with FIBA rules, take balls off of the rim, it could be badly needed. But no use crying over spilled milk. I'm happy and delighted with the team that we have. Sho, I assume you feel the same way?
Oh, yeah. I'm thrilled with the team that made it, like you were talking about with Alex. There are some, I don't know if like notable omissions is necessarily the right word, but looking at the squad that's going and then knowing that there are so many more extremely talented Canadian basketball players that could, I suppose, in theory, suit up for the Olympics if they do make it that far, or just for another edition of Canada basketball down the road. It's just kind of wild to me that we're at a spot where, and you brought up Steve Nash with Alex earlier, we're at a spot where the Canadian men's national team is leaving off actual NBA players, whereas before in our lifetimes, there was a point where they were struggling to cobble together even five NBA players for starting five, much less the bench. But now, more or less, it is entirely NBA players. Not everyone, certainly. There's a couple guys who are not in the NBA right now. But, you know, we're not so far away from them having to pick and choose from some of the best players on earth, essentially.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, of the five players who were not NBA players, their role in contribution. I think there's a huge role for someone like Melvin Ejim. I think there's a huge role for someone like Phil Scrubb. What a story that would be if he went essentially from winning the Wilson Cup, from winning OUA in U Sports Championships, wasn't even U Sports at the time, to potentially going to the Olympics for Canada. It'll be interesting to see how those players play alongside with, you know, the NBA stars that we're talking about. But to your point, there was a time when we were like, can we just get Jamal McGlure to play? Like, it'll be Jamal McGlure and everybody else. Can we just get Rick Fox to play? It'll be Rick Fox and everybody else.
Steve Jamal Nash, McGlure is a Scarborough Walk of Fame member.
He is. He's also now a CEBL champion.
That's right.
As Scarborough won the CEBL in their second year in the league. So shout out to Jamal McGlure and Brady Heslip, who has played for Team Canada before, the GM of the team, and Nico and the entire crew that brought basketball to Scarborough and now has brought a championship to Scarborough. We'll see if we can bring a medal back to Canada this summer. What are your expectations for what success looks like in this tournament?
I don't know if this is like a super homer take, Donovan. Also, the other thing I love about these international tournaments is that it's like some of the few times in the media you can kind of get away with saying we or right. our, which is kind of fun yeah. because I always remember when I was in journalism school, they were like, never, like, no cheering in the press box, but also the only time you get to use those is when it's like your country and like the Olympics, for example. But I think it does kind of extend to the World Cup.
Hey, listen, you're taking my tax money. I'm going to say we and our, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's the right way to look at it. I think it's a lot. It feels more personal when you can say we and our, but for the national teams, men and women's, it's always a little more fun. But I don't know. Again, maybe this is a homer take of me, but it kind of feels like getting to the knockout stage is a must. Like, if I know they're in a tough group, and like you have to play France, for example, who are always going to be favorites. But I mean, especially along with the other countries, like the Spain's and United States of the world and so on. But I don't know. You're talking about with Alex going to the quarters, that feels like a starting point. And I would be somewhat disappointed if there is not a medal at the end of the day. I don't really think, for me, it doesn't matter what the color of that medal is, but a medal, I think, is what's expected.
Oh, the color matters to me. Because as Alex pointed out in a bizarre fashion, it is feasible for Canada to win bronze and not make the Olympics.
Right.
Assuming that, you know, the United States and, let's say, Dominican Republic are 1-2 in the tournament, which is bizarre. Think about that. You are, we deem, in August of 2023, the third best country in the world. But in July of 2024, you won't be competing in the Olympics. Right. It's just so weird. So I think the color of the medal matters to me. But even beyond qualifying, because I think most Canadians, if you polled them and they're being honest, they would just say, just qualify. I don't really care how, if you finish fifth or sixth or first, just qualify. Just find a way to finish ahead of every other team from the Americas. But for me, I think this is a chance for a bit of a statement. If we were just drafting players and we put Canada up against, pick your nation, Spain, Greece without Giannis, France, Australia, how many players outside of the United States, how many times will we go to the well and pick a Canadian player first? I think a lot. I think maybe Australia is the only other nation. Like, man, Giddy's pretty good. Like, there are players where I'd think I would go to that roster. But yet and still, I think we have the amount of talent. We know as a nation, there is no other nation outside of the United States that has more NBA players than we do. And that's not even looking at what we have in the NCAA. Zach Edey is on this team. Zach Edey was arguably the best player in college basketball a year ago. I think there's no excuse. For once on the international stage, I want the sum to be greater than all of the parts and not lesser than. And so I want the talent to come together and make each other better and not what we've had historically where it's like, oh, we're figuring out the rules in this game and this opponent and each other. I want it all to come together at the right time.
Yeah, if you're starting five in any way, shape, or form includes guys like Zach Edey alongside Kelly Olynyk or Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Lou Dort and certainly Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, then it's true. Like they're, I'd be hard-pressed in international ball to find a starting five outside of the United States. And frankly, like given the players that are going to the specifically to this tournament for the U.S., maybe even the U.S., but there probably are not very many starting fives that you can rely upon that are better than those guys. And yeah, it's true. I mean, that you just haven't been able to say that again very many times in our lifetimes, which is pretty cool. Also, you were talking about your grandparents and how a lot of these kids are, I shouldn't say kids, but a lot of these athletes are first or second generation Canadians. It's funny. I will always have Donovan. I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I'll always have a big soft spot and a lot of time for Nikhil Alexander-Walker specifically. He used to go to the same school before he moved to the United States for, you know, for later stages of his basketball career. But when he was a young child, like when he was like around 10 years old or less, he and my brother went to the same elementary school, which was also the same school my mom was a teacher at. And so when my brother was younger, they were in the same classes. Nikhil would come over to our house and like hang out as a little kid and play video games with my brother and their friends and so on. So it's kind of cool to now to see him like represent Canada on the international stage and like doing it pretty well, like acquitting himself, I would say all things pretty well. And I was thrilled to see him drafted a couple of years ago. So it's pretty, I have a lot of time for all these guys, but maybe more than anyone else than Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
One, you've never told me that before. Two, how has he not been on the show? Like, he was blowing in your Nintendo cartridges.
Yeah.
Like, at least the guy could do you a favor and come on your show. That is too cool. And I love hearing those stories because it reminds us that, yeah, these are NBA stars. In the case of SGA, you know, a celebrity walking in Paris Fashion Week. But they came from our communities and played on the same courts and evidently played video games in the same living rooms as we did. So that is really, really cool. Rather fascinating, and I'm super intrigued by team dynamics. And we heard from Alex about the team, you know, sports psychologist that's working with the group, which I love the fact that they have, even though it's a short tournament. And there is a dynamic. We see this all the time at the MLS with the designated imports, where these one or two or three guys who individually make more than the rest of the team. And how does that work? Because it's still a team setting. And Steve Nash, there are legendary stories about him, you know, around the Sydney Olympics, not necessarily bringing himself down to the levels the rest of the team, but bringing them up, paying for flights so that the team could fly well, putting them up in, you know, good hotels, essentially making sure that everything was first class around him. And as I'm following Canada basketball on social media as they lead up to the tournament, and shout out to you know, the entire social group and Mo and everyone who's creating that content, I'm watching them, like, you know, come out of restaurants and walk around downtown, and I'm just thinking the tax brackets are entirely different for many of the members.
That's true.
Both within the NBA and all, but also just on the team, you know, period. You got Zach Edey, who's probably made a little bit of NIL money in the NCAA. You've got some players who've played overseas in Europe. And then you've got NBA stars and some NBA stars who've cashed in, like Dylan Brooks recently, like SGA. But then I'm also, like, looking at the fit, saying, well, you're packing for a month. Is there, like, a keeping up with the Joneses where it's like, I am on this team, yes, but how many off-white T-shirts am I supposed to bring with me? Do I ship some in and some out? How does that work? So these are the things that when everyone else is thinking about, you know, what do they do when they see an international box in one, I'm thinking about, man, like the fit checks on this team and the keeping up with the Joneses aspect of things would be pretty interesting. But those are the sort of interpersonal dynamics that either give you great team chemistry and camaraderie and success, or, you know, they start to pull at the fiber of what it means to be a team.
I just want to know how many pairs of underwear everyone packs. Like, do you pack like one for every day? Are you packing like three per day? You know, like, you were recently on vacation. Like, how much do you pack when you go away, when you're not at your own house? Like, do you underpack knowing that you're probably going to be where maybe you don't change as much, you come back with that? That's what I want to know, Donovan.
Great questions. I'm hoping that if Team Canada doesn't have its own laundry service, right, because you're going to be washing, you know, uniforms and practice,
that's true.
You know, jerseys and whatnot, you could throw some personal stuff in the wash, that the hotels with which they'd be staying at, they have a dry cleaning
service. You'd hope so.
I would hope so. And so, you know, I think that, you know, a hotel employee shows up and says, okay, thank you, Mr. Brooks. I've got your linens and your clothes for the next 5 days. You know, is there anything else that you need? Warm cookie? Right up, sir. No problem.
Have you seen, by the way, Donovan, the picture of Dylan Brooks that they've used for Canada basketball? Like, I swear, every other picture of every other player is like them standing up, like straight, smiling. And I swear Dylan Brooks intentionally made his picture look like he is the most villainous player on earth.
Oh, it is intentional, because Dylan Brooks is leaning in to this entire persona. He is doing it with pride, so much so that let's play this bit of sound of, again, talked about the great work done by the social team at Canada Basketball. The team being asked between Ryan Reynolds and Drake, who their favorite Canadian is.
Favorite Canadian, Drake or Ryan Reynolds?
Drake. All right, Drake.
Ah, Drake.
Drake. I'm going to go with Drake.
Drake.
Drake?
Drake.
The Drake guy.
Drake.
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 Ryan Reynolds.
Listen, you heard a bunch of voices. It doesn't matter the names if you weren't able to place them, because to a man, everyone, almost unanimous, said Drake, except for Dylan Brooks, who had to say Ryan Reynolds. Now, it's because he is that guy. He is a heel. He just has to be different. Or some on the internet are wondering, it's because, well, who does Drake have a great alliance with? He's made songs about him. He made, you know, the cover song for the movie that he had about his life, More Than a Game. He walked out with him at Staples and said that this is his building. Well, some people thought, well, actually, it's not LeBron's building, it's Kobe's building, but whatever. Drake and LeBron have had a long, ongoing bromance, and Dylan Brooks and LeBron have had a recent feud, if you will, something that he's fueling with his incendiary, I don't know if I've ever said that before in a work setting or any setting, but it feels appropriate now, relationship with LeBron James. He is thrown more gasoline on that fire in his interview with Arash Madani, which you can find on sportsnet.ca. If you don't want to look that hard, we'll throw it in the show notes. Dylan Brooks, I believe, had to say he didn't like Drake and prefers Ryan Reynolds, not because he loved the Wrexham series, which is on FX. You can watch it on Rogers On Demand. I'm a company man. No, because he was like, expletive you and the click you claim. If you're cool with LeBron, you're not cool with me. That is my theory. There was another, and this is what happens after, you know, the various media days that these teams go through. There's another social video that was posted, and the caption is like, oh, Dennis Schroeder is going to be loved in Toronto. He's going to be a fan favorite because he had to recite Drake lyrics, essentially finished the lyric.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, he knows his Drake lyrics so well.
I was running through
the six with my woes, right?
Started from the
bottom, now we're here.
You used to call me.
On my cell phone.
If you listen to the intonation in his answers, he answered everything with a question mark. Like, starting from the bottom, now we're here. Like, that's the name of the song. It's not like it's like a deep cut, a Drake feature that some people haven't heard from a UK artist, and you need to know what the Drake lyric is. You're talking about choruses that you asked him, and he had to say 2 to 3 words to finish, and he still said it with a question mark. And maybe the question mark was like, really? That's the lyric that you're asking me? But I was not impressed. If we're going to talk about great Canadians, you know, shout out to Shania Twain. That don't impress me much.
Dennis Schroeder, also a sneaky good international player, a guy who seems to show up pretty much all the time internationally. Well, I don't know.
All the time against Canada, for sure.
I don't know if that's necessarily going to translate to being the Fred VanVleet replacement in Toronto with the Raptors necessarily. Maybe it will. I kind of hope it does, just because I don't know if I want to watch all the exact kind of offense we saw at times for much of last year prior to Poeltl's arrival, but you know, I am very curious post FIBA, Donovan, what the new look Raptors look like. Although, you know, I like to think the coach is still going to be the coach come beginning of the season. Although you never know.
He forever will live rent free in my mind. When he and Nembhard were going back and forth a couple of years ago, and he was just that guy against Canada, it hurt me so much because it's like, dude, you're not this good in the NBA. How, because it's a FIBA ball, you're able to shoot now. There are always these international players who are much better for their nation than they are for their country.
Kelly Olynyk is kind of like that.
Kelly Olynyk is like that. Juan Carlos Navarro is like that. Carlos Arroyo has just murdered the United States every time in international competition.
Does Luis Scola still play basketball?
Probably just for international competitions. Yeah, because he would be in that conversation as well.
I want to, you know, I will say internationally, just to wrap up this conversation, it was a shock that Argentina did not make it. I got to say, that was a surprise to me. They're not going to play. They got beaten by, I want to say, a couple of like nationalized players for the Bahamas recently in like what was a last chance tournament. And now Argentina will not play at the 2024 Olympics, I believe, which is kind of nuts. I mean, considering we were having that same conversation when it comes to Canada, if, you know, they could, in theory, if things fall the right way or the wrong way, depending on how you look at it. But in theory, you could see Canada win a bronze medal and not play at the Olympics. Similarly, it feels kind of like alien to say that Argentina will not be playing at the 2024 Paris Olympics, just because you're kind of used to seeing them play alongside the Spains and the Frances and the United States of the world.
Low-key, Bahamas is a threat. Eric Gordon evidently is one of those players who plays much better for the Bahamas than, one, he did for the United States when he played for the United States, two, than he does in the NBA right now. DeAndre Ayton has decided, well, I shouldn't say has decided because he literally is Bahamian, but as a Jamaican, I was holding out hope that he would, you know, find those side of his roots, but he did spend his upbringing in the Bahamas, so I can't hate. DeAndre Ayton is a force, and if they do qualify for the Olympics, Klay Thompson could play for their baseball team, but Klay Thompson could be a factor for them, so they're a sneaky country to watch. Hopefully, Canada is not a sneaky country to watch anymore. They're a loud country when the tournament gets started. Can't wait to continue to follow this team, and we'll continue to talk about it right here on Going Deep.